Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Pella Window and Door of Georgia, viewed to be the best.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
I love Star Wars, and, you know, lately my kids and our whole family, you know, we kind of do a little tradition at night, kind of settling down after a busy day. We'll sort of watch a little bit of a movie. That's kind of our sort of wind down moment for the day. We've been going back and rewatching all the Star Wars movies as of late, and, you know, watching that original trilogy. I am, once again, absolutely of the belief that the best Star Wars movie that's ever been made is The Empire Strikes Back. I just love it. And when you go back and watch that, you're kind of reminded of how you felt when you were a kid, obviously. And it's just sort of a cool storyline and a little bit unlike a lot of other sort of big blockbuster movies that are out there, because in a roundabout way, the bad guys sort of won. The good guys had their moment in the original movie, and yet the sequel was about, you know, the Empire striking back. The Empire getting back to even again with the good guys after what had happened in the original movie, which obviously came out in 1977. And I think there was a little bit of that for G-Day on Saturday, which is not to suggest that I think of the Georgia defense as the bad guys here. But I do think there are some Galactic Empire qualities, if you've seen Star Wars, about the way in which the Georgia defense goes about its business, you know, sort of dominant and just striking fear in the heart of all opponents. So I don't think of the Georgia defense being bad guys, but I do think they sort of operate the same way that the Empire would in some of those old Star Wars movies. And after a time in which, hey, you know, the Georgia defense had sort of maybe taken its lumps during spring practice, and some of this was kind of based on rumor and innuendo of, well, the Georgia offense is doing this, and so-and-so is doing that, and maybe the Georgia defense didn't quite do as well. In fact, Kirby Smart himself sort of confirmed that after the first scrimmage of didn't stop the run as well as we need to, and didn't do this, didn't do that. For the most part on Saturday, the Georgia defense struck back. For the most part, the Georgia defense, who had heard all these people hyping up all this stuff related to the Georgia offense, knowing that the eyes of the TV audience are going to be on the game and that there are going to be tens upon tens and tens of thousands of fans there in the stadium, and media types such as ourselves are going to be there ready to kind of hype up whatever it was that we saw. This Georgia defense wanted to answer back in a big way. And Kirby Smart, when he kicked off his postgame press conference after what was really a 20-20 tie, but ultimately that result itself probably doesn't mean a whole lot, Kirby did kind of acknowledge, hey, this was a defense that sort of responded to what had maybe been some challenges in previous scrimmages earlier during the spring. This is how Kirby Smart kind of summed all of that up after spring practice concluded with G-Day on Saturday.
I thought the defense played much better today than they did in previous scrimmages in terms of like energy, enthusiasm, running to the ball. We rushed the passer better today. Offense probably didn't have as good a day as maybe they've had in the two scrimmages, but some of that was dictated by the terms of which we scrimmaged with, which was passing and loose plays, and they did a nice job handling that in the second half.
So put a pin in that last part about what the offense did, and in particular Carson Beck, because, you know, Beck's a famous guy and a sort of the most recognizable figure currently involved with Georgia football. So a lot of the initial takes on a spring scrimmage game like this are going to be centered around Beck. So coming up in just a few minutes here, we'll get more into the Carson Beck part of what Saturday was. But I want to focus on the initial part of that Kirby Smart statement for a moment here, and the fact that it was a better day defensively than it had been. Now, to me, there are sort of two important takeaways from that. First of all, if you'll kind of ask me, you know, how will the 2024 G-Day be remembered? For me, I'm going to remember this in terms of just a long list of names, and focusing on defense here for a moment, long list of names of guys that I saw flash for a brief period of time and saw enough of them to say, boy, I'd like to see more. You know, I can't wait to see more. Can't wait to see them doing some of this kind of stuff against a team wearing a different color jersey coming up in September, October, whatever, of the upcoming year. And I'm sure you've got your own list there as well. In fact, you know, you think about a Daniel Harris or a Chris Cole or a KJ Bolden or a Joseph Jonah Janye, CJ Allen, Dalen Everett, Julian Humphrey. You know, at various times, those guys, and the list could get even longer, of guys who you saw, wow, look at him flying to the football. Look at the length on this guy. Look at the speed on that guy. You know, look at the way in which so-and-so fought and did this. It just sort of seemed like the overall list of guys who had moments where they flashed and impressed, it just seemed like on G-Day, that was very, very long. And obviously over the course of the next couple of weeks, we'll continue to kind of unpack some of that. But the other thing about the Georgia defense on Saturday, and this is just one of the things that has made Georgia Georgia, was the way in which Georgia went about its business. Obviously, there's talent, and obviously some of these newcomers, we're excited to see more of them. But this G-Day spring scrimmage, especially in a day and age in which Ole Miss is a glorified field day, and, you know, a lot of these other things sort of feel like vacation Bible school with the, you know, Red Rover, send so-and-so right over. You know, like a lot of things that are going on right now don't really feel like spring games, and some teams barely even have a spring game at all. As we said a lot going into Saturday, Georgia still makes this feel like football. And when Georgia's out there playing something close to real football, you see the way in which real football players emerge. And that was the other thing about the Georgia defense on Saturday. And perhaps nothing kind of encapsulates that more than something that Kirby Smart was saying about Jalen Walker, about the fact that Walker, the very good Georgia linebacker, has been a little bit banged up thus far this spring. And yet Jalen's commitment, with the understanding that how you do anything is how you do everything, Jalen's commitment to want to be out there on Saturday, even though it wasn't a real game, demonstrates what a real football player he really is. And when you think about the overall good day for the Georgia defense, it's the sort of mindset that it approaches stuff like this with that I think reminds us of why it is that this unit has had so much success in recent years. This is what Kirby said about Jalen Walker. I thought this was great.
You know, Jalen missed a lot of time this spring with an ankle injury, and today was his first day back. And, you know, it doesn't say enough about our team. The kids are trying to get out of spring games all around the country, and this guy was mad that we were thinking about not playing him. I mean, he wanted to play. He wanted to go out there and compete and get better, and really appreciate Jalen's leadership and the way he handles things.
So we have said before that we think this year's Georgia team could be a little bit more led by quarterback and a little bit more led by offense overall than we're kind of used to Kirby Smart era teams being. And just the prodigious nature of the offensive talent may be the reason why that's so, if it turns out to be that way. But as Kirby describes Jalen Walker there, and as you see guys playing around Walker on Saturday, you're kind of reminded about the spiritual value of this Georgia defense overall. They bring sort of an intangible quality in addition to their own very impressive talent. And a guy like Jalen Walker demonstrating that on the fact that, hey, I want to be out there, I want to do things, I want to lead my team. And by the way, if you're watching a video, how good is a lot of this video that our producer and colleague Cody Chaffins put together here? I mean, I don't think the show's ever looked better on video than it's looking here right now. And I just wanted to kind of point that out. Sharp stuff there from Walker. And, you know, if you're listening podcasts, which we're always thankful to have you, it may be worth checking out some of this video just because it looks so good on screen. But the point is that Walker, I think, sets a high standard for how Georgia wants to operate. And this isn't just the theatrics, because admittedly a lot last week I was, you know, kind of into, hey, good for Georgia and making this feel like a real football game. It's fun for fans to sort of see the teams divided up and have normal scoring. And I kind of talked on Saturday a little bit about the red shakers for half the stadium, the black shakers for half the stadium, almost like it's two different teams and two different fan bases. That Georgia kind of gets the theatric part of this right, making G-Day still feel something like a real football game. But as Kirby Smart was talking on Saturday, it kind of occurred to me that this is more than just the optics. This is more than just the attempt to sort of make something look good on TV or feel good to the fans who are in the stadium. As Smart pointed out, you know, when you take the right approach, I should say, during this time of year, it can set you up to have the sort of success that you want to have during the fall. Because take account of a guy like Mikael Williams for a moment. Williams, pound for pound, may have been the single most impressive player on Saturday. Had an interception, had a good number of deflected passes, seemed to be the sort of unblockable force at times that Georgia fans believe he can be for this upcoming season. And when Smart was talking about Mikael during the post-game press conference, he kind of veered in that direction of the way in which they've specifically challenged Mikael, that this spring time of year is more than just some glorified walkthroughs leading up to a made-for-TV event that sort of approximates real football. As Smart says, if you get off to the right start with your year during this portion of the year, you can be set up for the kind of success that will make you a household name by the time the season is done. And when you hear Smart talking about Mikal, I think it reinforces the fact that G-Day truly does matter, or G-Day as the punctuation mark to the entirety of spring practice, that really matters. And Smart talking about Mikal Williams, I think, reinforces how true that is. Once again, here's Kirby Smart.
First and foremost, he's been, what's the right word, present. He's been able to practice. He has not. He had spring practice last year. He missed some practice. He had fall camp last year. He missed some practice. And I explained to him, you know, if you want to have a really good year, you want to have a really good camp. He's kind of bought into that. Like, practicing good makes you better. You can't, it's not his fault, he's injured, but you can't play good if you don't practice. So I felt that he had a really good spring from a standpoint of leadership, toughness. And he didn't get a ton of reps. I mean, the guy's been a two-year starter, but it'll be, you know, a chance to get Ty more reps when we come back in the fall. Continue to increase Joseph Jelajai and then Justin Green. So we got some defensive ends that can spell him, but he was a factor today.
So I love that from Kirby Smart, that spring practice isn't some sort of separate entity that's disconnected from the rest of the football calendar, that the hopes of having a good season and becoming a high-value first-round draft pick, perhaps at the end of this upcoming NFL, at the end of in the next year's NFL draft, or, you know, being an All-American level player, or someone who just sort of dominates the way in which we've come to expect Georgia players to be able to do on that side of the ball, the kind of good season you want to have begins with a good spring. And not just for Mikal Williams, who was, I thought, sensational on Saturday, but the entirety of the Georgia defense overall, that this was a little bit of a Georgia defense strikes back moment. This is a unit that took its lumps a little bit last year because it wasn't as dominant as it has been in the past. Whispers, and some of this coming directly from Kirby Smart, would have led you to believe that maybe they weren't also getting the best of the Georgia offense during a lot of these spring scrimmages over the course of the last month either. But they certainly more than held their own on Saturday. And for as much as this fall we're excited about what a Carson Beck team can be, and what the kind of receiving talent that Beck could have around him, what that could accomplish, a group of Georgia running backs who perhaps played a little bit better on Saturday than many would have expected them to do. For as much excitement and optimism and enthusiasm as there is on that side of the ball, the Georgia defense reminded on Saturday, they have been a major component in national championship teams in the past. Here in 2024, they could be ready to do that all over again. My name's Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented today by Pella Window and Door of Georgia. We are happy to have you with us, no matter how you get to us, live on video, 10 a.m. across all platforms, radio, Athens Sports Radio 960 RF, podcast, wherever you find them, Apple, Spotify, worldfamousdognation.com. Just really happy to have you here. And so thankful to our friends at Pella Window and Door of Georgia, who make it all possible. You know, equipping your house with energy-efficient windows and doors, this is that time of year. It was really warm for the most part all weekend long. That means air conditionings are on. And AC's kind of expensive, right? And if you have improperly fitted windows, poorly sealed doors, that's a loss of energy efficiency, which means you may be paying for, you know, big bucks for some of this AC, and it's like sort of creeping out of your house before it gets a chance to really keep you and your family as cool as you'd like for it to. But that's not going to be the issue when it comes to our friends at Pella Window and Door of Georgia. They're going to give you those energy-efficient windows and doors that keeps that air conditioning on the inside of the house exactly where it's supposed to be, and keeping you all feeling cool and comfortable all spring and summer long. It's also going to make your home look better on the outside, and curb appeal is always a valuable asset to have when it comes to your home. And that's why you want to have a conversation right now with one of those Pella experts. Now, this is the way you can get that done. You can go visit them yourself there at their Experience Center in Duluth. I think that's always a great way to kind of, I'm a little bit of a tactile person, like to put my hands on things. You can touch the doors, you can touch the windows, you can feel what makes them different and why they are viewed to be the best, more than just a slogan, when it comes to Pella Window and Door of Georgia. But if you value your convenience, our friends at Pella, one of those Pella experts, can come out and visit you there as well at your own home. And this is a no-pressure consultation. They're not trying to push you towards something. They simply want to educate you on why their product is what you need when it's time to upgrade your windows and doors, make your house look as good as it can and feel as good as it possibly can there as well. You can reach out to them by giving them a call, 678-638-1429. That's 678-638-1429. You can also give them a look up online at PellaOfGA.com/DogNation. One more time on that website, PellaOfGA.com/DogNation. Between now and the end of the month, you can get 10% off your Pella project and 0% APR for 24 months with payments. So good savings right now there as well. So find them and make sure you tell them that BA from Dog Nation Daily said they'd take good care of you, because I truly know that they will, because that's what they've been doing for folks in our audience for a very long time. Pella Window and Door of Georgia is viewed to be the best. All right, we're going to get John Stinchcomb here in a moment. A lot to discuss with John today about how G-Day played out on Saturday. But prior to that, I'm going to go around the doghouse. And it's poured today by our friends at Dr. Pepper. And I want to address what I think was maybe the number one fan concern from Saturday, that, well, if there's a good performance from the Georgia defense, if they're doing some good things, that means at times maybe it wasn't the best day for the Georgia offense overall, and perhaps especially early, a few more misfires than you would have liked to have seen from Georgia quarterback Carson Beck. Now, let me give you one sort of scene setter to kind of talk about this in the proper context. There was a moment, I was at halftime, I guess, when Kirby Smart was standing there with Brock Bowers and kind of acknowledging him as winning the Mackey Award again for a second time. And Kirby kind of did the "we're not worthy" bow to Bowers, which was very funny. And just sort of gives you an idea of the fact that Kirby overall is pretty relaxed. And I would say that, much the same way that any coach sets the tone for his players in terms of how they feel emotionally, I would say for the overall fan base of Dog Nation, that's probably a pretty good idea too. Take your emotional cue from Kirby Smart, and if he's relaxed, then perhaps you ought to be relaxed there as well. And so for some Georgia fans who weren't quite so sure what they got from Carson Beck, as we played for you early, Kirby kind of caveated some of this with, keep in mind, we're throwing it more than we typically do. Defense sort of knows what's coming. The same group's been battling the offense all year long. So maybe don't read too much into any of that in terms of what was a day in which Beck admittedly wasn't perfect and probably was, certainly at times inaccurate on a couple of deep throws, especially early in the game. As far as the overall evaluation of Carson, this is what else Kirby had to say about that there on Saturday, how he thought Carson Beck performed in what is likely to be his final G-Day in a Georgia uniform. One more time to hear from Kirby Smart.
Carson had a great spring to me. He's had a quiet leadership. He's got a lot of confidence. When things aren't going well, kids and players in O-line turned to him. He had a really good moxie out on the field. He never, pressed or got frustrated even today. He drove the team down and made some really elite throws there at the end to give us a chance to tie the ball game. But in taking today out of it, I don't even go off today. He's had a good spring. He knows how to navigate a pocket. He knows where to go with the ball. There's nothing he hasn't seen on defense. So I'm happy with where he is. I want him to continue to grow as a leader.
So the question you ask yourself is, and this is obviously a rhetorical question, what would you rather be true? A player has a great spring and maybe at times a little shaky on G-Day, or someone has, kind of a less than stellar spring practice punctuated by an awesome performance on G-Day. Obviously, if you're better on G-Day than you've been during the spring, there's a very good possibility that what you perform, the way that you perform in spring game, could end up being a false positive. Everything we've been told all spring long is exactly what Kirby Smart described there, a player who's had a tremendous spring practice. And a couple of misfires and a couple of deep balls doesn't change my overall impression of Beck that he is the best returning quarterback in America. I do get where fans are coming from some on this. When all you've heard are all these good things about Carson Beck, you want to get the full entertainment value out of Beck playing as well as he possibly could. I do totally understand that. And I obviously also completely understand why Carson is going to be the focal point of discussion after a scrimmage like this, because he is by far and away the most famous player on the team. I do get why the chatter exists. But I don't know that there was anything about Saturday for Beck that was demonstrative of what his overall season is going to be. This wasn't really Georgia's offense in terms of run-pass ratio and the kinds of passing plays that Georgia was running. This wasn't exactly that. But even in addition to all of that, there was still a lot to like from the Georgia offense. As we discussed during our post-game show on Saturday, Colby Young seemed like he was as advertised. The overall Georgia running back performance was pretty impressive. Anthony Evans had a couple of nice moments there as well. But even in the midst of a day in which we probably came away praising defense more than offense, there were still plenty of moments of the Georgia offense, and I think plenty of reason to still believe that Georgia is going to be in more than capable hands with Carson Beck as quarterback here this season. And that is Around the Doghouse here today on Dog Nation Daily, poured by our friends at Dr. Pepper. Busy weekend for us, even after G-Day, right? You know, kids just running around doing all kinds of stuff. And so, you know, yesterday, after kind of being a – we did just so many different things, you kind of come home, you sort of plop down, and literally I go to the refrigerator, walk right over, pull out a Dr. Pepper, and I just plop down on the couch and just try to relax for a couple of minutes. When I get ready to relax and kind of take a little bit of a break from the busy things I have going on, it is a Dr. Pepper I'm turning to make that moment as enjoyable as it can possibly be. The rich, one-of-a-kind flavor of Dr. Pepper blended with 23 different flavors overall. That's why we say it's a pepper thing, whether it's Dr. Pepper Zero Sugar, Diet Dr. Pepper, Dr. Pepper Strawberries and Cream. You've heard us talk about that before. There are all kinds of fun options for you out there on this. But just know that on this show, we're always pretty well powered by Dr. Pepper, today included. And so we want you to be there as well. So if you're shopping there at your local Kroger or wherever it is you're picking up your groceries, pick up some Dr. Pepper today, because it's not just a soda. It's a one-of-a-kind, delicious level of flavor for you to enjoy. It truly is a pepper thing. Great to have Dr. Pepper bringing Around the Doghouse to us here today. And great to have John Stinchcomb coming up there as well. A lot to discuss as it relates to G-Day there on Saturday and kind of what comes next for Georgia after all of that. So let's get into some of the individual names and how it was all performed, and let's also at least pay a little bit of mind here to that ominous transfer portal that's kind of floating off in the corner here, knowing that's about to open up, and there could be some drama, not just for Georgia, but all of college football as it relates to that. Let's cover all that ground right now. John Stinchcomb here today on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Pella Window and Door of Georgia.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
We will say hello to John Stinchcomb. Always great to have him as part of Dog Nation Daily, presented by Pella Window and Door of Georgia. And John, your breakdown of what you saw from G-Day, very valuable to us. So I guess let me start this way. My initial takeaway, probably a little bit better day for the defense than the offense. Not the kind of thing that makes me concerned about the Georgia offense overall, but, you know, perhaps a Georgia defense that maybe had heard some of the things that people were saying about them over the course of the last few weeks and what was kind of said about this group after, you know, last season, in which it probably wasn't quite the same level it had been in a couple of national championship seasons. Is that your takeaway, too, that maybe pound for pound defense got the best of the offense and what was otherwise a 2020 tie?
Yeah, I think it's your standard scrimmage. You know, it's G-Day where you can't really look too far into the statistics or what you saw. It is about as vanilla as you can get, even, you know, late in the G-Day, where most of the time they would have gone for two. You hear Coach Smart saying, we don't want to reveal some of our two-point plays. So to think that there's a little bit of a handicap here would be an understatement as to the performance that we saw on Saturday. With that said, you can still get a lot of great information. How do you run the nuts and bolts, the meats and potatoes of what you're doing schematically on both sides of the ball? It's individual matchups and performance. And I think we saw a lot of guys that we've seen progress from, which is exactly what I'm looking for in a spring training culmination at the end of a few weeks of practice. Is where are guys at? How have they progressed? You know, there's holes that need to be filled, and it appears that there's some very viable candidates. And it also gave us our first shot at seeing some of these transfers and first year guys, what they look like in the red and black.
Yeah, as I said, I don't make a huge deal out of, I would say, less than a perfect day from Carson Beck, but I also want to acknowledge the fan discussion about this of, after all they'd heard about Carson, you know, coming into the game, I think they were kind of hoping for this like laser show type performance. And maybe for Carson on Saturday, it stopped a little bit short of being that. If you did evaluate what you were able to see from Carson and trying to put aside what you think you already know about him, what other people have said they've seen from Carson in other moments, you know, here this spring, if you could only evaluate what you saw from Carson on Saturday, what would your takeaway on him be?
Yeah, it would be different than what my takeaway is. And I think if you look in a vacuum on a singular performance on Saturday, wasn't great. Now, a tip ball that ends up in an interception, I don't really, you know, that's going to happen. It doesn't seem to be his MO. He's a taller guy. So those kind of plays are rarities. But all in all, I'm glad that I don't have to base an analysis on one given spring practice. And for any player, I think more than anything, we all should leave with the utmost of confidence. For those that saw the day in and day out of Carson's performance, one, last season, and two, throughout this spring, we should have a heck of a lot. There's other places where there might be question marks more in depth than anything else, but quarterback is not a concern for me. I'm fully anticipatory that he's going to have an exceptional year. And that, you know, Saturday was not his best performance, and nor do we need it to be.
How about Gunnar Stockton here for a moment? Because this is a guy that I had said going into the scrimmage that I was maybe as interested in as anybody, because, you know, this can be a big year for Gunnar. A, you got to have a capable backup quarterback, as you and I have discussed before. And also, this is maybe the next step towards what might be Gunnar Stockton as the starting quarterback for 2025. And while we're all focused on this year, we're going to want Georgia to have a good starting quarterback in 2025 once we get there as well. And, you know, I liked some of what I saw from Stockton. I thought he made a couple of really nice throws. You know, I think the day for him probably stopped short of being, oh my gosh, you know, this is the next big thing. But I don't know that you could have proven that on G-Day anyway. So, you know, Stockton, I was probably looking to watch a little bit more closely and perhaps a little bit more willing to nitpick some of the stuff with him compared to Beck, because we got a full season's worth of seeing what Carson Beck is like as a starting quarterback. And, you know, I'm just curious from your perspective how you thought that Gunnar performed.
Yeah, I mean, he had a ton of reps. I know that, especially with Puglisi not taking any of those reps because of a knee injury. So he had a lot of opportunity. With that said, what he brings to the table is, one, creation of off-schedule plays. You're not going to see that in G-Day.
Yep.
Two, you can set plays for his mobility that give him more option. We didn't see a lot of that either. So to take away two aspects of his game that could make him much more dynamic, I think that needs to be a part of his evaluation. So you're evaluating him on how he runs the vanilla formation of this Georgia offense. And, you know, it was mediocre. And that's not unsurprising to me. I think more than anything, it's an evaluation of how does he manage the 75% of that play sheet that applies to any of the quarterbacks that are wearing a G on the side of their helmet. And I think you get him in a game situation or you're game planning for him, and it looks a heck of a lot different. So again, I take all these evaluations with a huge grain of salt. It's a good insight into where they're at in their development, but it certainly isn't an indication of, well, if they perform really well in spring practice or in G-Day, then they're going to have a great year. And if they don't, then we're in trouble. I think we've seen in the past, it's almost an annual basis where there's some player, usually it's a walk-on late in that G-Day where you go, ooh, he could be a factor, and that never really materializes. And that's a good indication that you can only put so much weight and credibility in what you see in a G-Day and understand that it's only a very small microcosm of a much bigger picture.
I asked you last week what you were looking to see, and one of the things you mentioned was kind of a dynamic level of play on the edge of this defense. That kind of that sort of front group anyway probably needs to be better, and that perhaps a little bit more, you know, dynamic play coming from edge rusher, defensive end. And to me, that's what Mikael Williams was on Saturday, deflecting passes, getting an interception, just at times looking like the force that I think we sort of believe that Mikael Williams can really be here this year. Did Mikael provide the answer to what you were hoping to see from that group, and maybe beyond him, anything else that sort of stood out there as it relates to that part of the game?
Yes, absolutely. Two players caught my attention. Obviously, Williams being the first and foremost. He looks like your play-in, play-out, edge setter, difference maker that Georgia needs. Well, one, that's a big human. So to see him stand up as much as he did and then perform well, it's a transition. You go from having your hand in the dirt and then being in a two-point race car stance and then making plays in space. That's not always easy for a guy that's used to everything being in a much more contained area. So he was very impressive. I'm excited to see what this season holds. I think we'll be able to call his name just because of the ask that is going to be of him this coming season is going to be so considerably different than what we've seen in the past. I mean, obviously this defense isn't keyed on an individual's performance. It is team first, unit first, everyone play your role. With that said, he's a difference maker. Another guy that caught my attention in flashes was Gabe Harris. And he's a guy that he's got that quick twitch and can be a real difference maker situationally. So two guys that, you know, if you're watching the edge and you're looking for, you know, do we have an upgrade there? Is there a performance edge that we could see potentially on Saturday? I think the answer is yes. And, you know, it was obviously those two were on the sheet that you had highlighted and in anticipatory as to what they might be able to do. And I think they answered that call. I think it's more about consistency for some of these younger players and how they can carve out their role once we get to August and rolling into the season. But I was excited about what I saw coming off the edge.
If we broaden this out kind of for one more question about G-Day, and you know how it is, John, it's like there's more about a game like this that can be talked about in one day. So we're trying to get as sort of much out there today as we can and obviously fill in the gaps the rest of the week here. So if I were to just say anything, either team, either side of the ball, any player, anything else from G-Day that you thought was noteworthy enough to say, let me give this a mention here. I kind of rattled through some names a little earlier. And I don't even think I even got all of those on the defensive side of the ball that I would have liked to have mentioned. So anything else that you thought sort of stood out from what you saw there on Saturday?
Yeah, and this is a little bit of a surprise for me. It was just the number of offensive weapons. I think you saw the rotation of receivers and running backs, and the addition of Etienne, I think, is going to be a big deal. Catching a pass out of the backfield, I think you saw at times how dynamic and explosive he can be. It'll be good to see him wearing red rather than orange this season because he seems to be a playmaker. And then just watching some of the separation that the receivers got on Saturday, not even when they were making catches, but that seems to be a group that, you know, last year we saw the emergence of Dylan Bell, and I don't think that was exactly anticipated. But it certainly was welcomed. And watching guys like Anthony Evans go out there and make some plays and be a factor, obviously the addition of Colby, seeing, you know, that's a big old joker and has a big frame. So I'm excited to see the number of weapons that Georgia has. It seems to be that not only do we have one of, if not the best, returning quarterback in college football, but you've now added a number of pieces and developed guys in-house that there are weapons across the board. It's going to be a challenge to replace the likes of a Brock Bowers, but when you have as many capable bodies as what we saw on Saturday and what we continue to hear from the coaches and coming out of the practices, I'm excited to see how that all develops. I mean, there's only one football, and there's a heck of a lot of playmakers that potentially could be real major factors come this fall that seem to be pretty exciting from what I saw.
Let me do two quick follows up to that. One of those, you mentioned Colby Young. I thought that was one of the most fun things on Saturday. Now, I only had probably, three catches, but one of them is like a contested third down where he has to use his, you know, body to go up and kind of haul in kind of a bullet from Carson Beck, and he seemingly did that with ease. I mean, he got the red zone touchdown. You know, we didn't really predict on the show. We thought that Arian Smith and Colby Young would both catch touchdowns on Saturday. Didn't quite get that from Arian, but we did get that from Young. And after all we had heard, about Colby Young during spring practice, to me, the G-Day game kind of confirmed all those rumors of, kind of brought here for a purpose, a body type that sort of fits a specific role. I really feel like I saw that from him on Saturday.
Agreed. And I think it's important, especially in the red zone, to have big targets. Mm-hmm. You've had a Brock Bowers who you know, played in the slot as much as he did in line tight end, probably more. So you need a body that's a matchup challenge. And when you get that from a wide receiver against, you know, your standard defensive back that, you know, there's many times where he's going to have a 6-7 inch advantage over the defensive back trying to cover him. So I think that really bodes well. And, you know, all of what we've heard and what we've seen prior of what he could bring to the table, I think we got a real good glimpse. 3 catches, not statistically all that impressive, but that the way he used his frame, the matchup potential that you see, I think is a real added bonus for what this offense can present come this fall. I'm excited about him. I think everything that we've heard has been very positive, and you know, you need to have guys like that. One of the more quiet positions in this game was tight end, but yet we know there's some very capable bodies that are returning. I mean, it's not Bowers, but Oscar Delp coming back. I mean, I'm excited to see what he does in that role and in that capacity, along with others, including Lucky. So there's a number of guys that can make those matchups a real challenge for safeties and linebackers. And with Colby on the outside, there's only so many big bodies a defense feels comfortable covering without changing personnel. And that's a real good thing for Coach Bobo as he gets ready for game planning, which they didn't do in G-Day, but he certainly will do in August.
My other follow-up to what you said earlier was, I thought the running back group was really fun on Saturday. And I feel like maybe over the course of the last few weeks, I haven't talked enough about Andrew Paul. I thought Paul was kind of a fun player to kind of zero in on a little bit on Saturday. Had a couple of really nice runs and kind of showed a little bit of a spark. And we obviously still believe that Branson Robinson can eventually be a big part of this. He's, you know, clearly recovering from a serious injury right now, but ETN certainly showed some stuff. Robinson, the kind of bruiser he hoped he could be. Andrew Paul, though, is the guy we really haven't talked very much about. And I thought Paul gave you a little bit on Saturday. That running back group, to me, was kind of a more fun than I expected group for the G-Day scrimmage.
Yeah, and I think Paul is one of those guys that fits multiple molds. It's not, you know, if Etienne, you see him as that dynamic playmaker, let's get him in space, a la James Cook most recently, but your every down back might look a little different. And Paul's got that power, the ability to run between the tackles, but also the dynamic explosiveness in space that you're looking for. Obviously, you know, you don't want to pigeonhole guys, but a guy like Roderick is more of a pounder. You know, it's third and one, I'll tell you who I want to get the ball. Mm-hmm. And you feel confident that he can push a pile for a yard or two. Whereas Paul's a guy that's shown he's a little more dynamic in his capabilities in both categories, if you will. So I'm very excited about that position group. I think you've got a number of guys that you like their skill set and how they complement one another, probably more so than what we had last year. I'm a big fan of Dejon Edwards, but I think there is probably a higher end overall to this group. And really, I think you could say that across the board for this offensive group. I think, you know, you look at every position group with the exception of tight end, because you had a freak of nature last year. And I think you probably feel a little bit better heading into the season with every other position group offensively than you did last year.
All right, let me finish with this, if you don't mind. This week, the transfer portal is going to open up for a 15-day period. And, John, as you're aware, there are all kinds of doomsday predictions of a coming apocalypse, not necessarily for Georgia, but for college football overall. We've heard some, you know, sort of talking heads say it's going to be, you know, a situation where some teams get gutted and just, you know, they're going to lose, you know, so many players, and there's going to be, you know, chaos unprecedented, and it's all being powered by, you know, the opportunity to kind of utilize NIL and the fact that there's seemingly no kind of restriction on transfers at all anymore. And I know you and I've talked plenty about this kind of stuff in the past, but, you know, as this gets ready to happen, you know, what should a Georgia football fan's mindset be with, you know, 15 days of just absolute wildness that might be on the way here?
Yeah, I think for Georgia, it's more of a depth question than anything else. We're not built like USC or Colorado that has 2/3 of their roster turnover for transfers to walk in and out of the door. That's just not the way Georgia's built. I think the bigger question is, you know, what's the depth look like for the highly recruited player that, you know, finds himself at the end of spring, third or fourth on the depth chart? Is he willing to kind of pay his dues and take that back seat and stick around waiting for that opportunity or growing into that opportunity? Or is he going to chase something that might be a little shinier and a little quicker in a return opportunity for him? I also think there's, you know, Georgia's never been one to dive deep into the transfer portal to get players, but there might be one or two that we could add that, you know, Coach Smart has identified as areas of need. And, you know, another scholarship quarterback is certainly something that's been reported multiple times. That wouldn't be all that surprising. But I think for Georgia fans, this certainly isn't, you know, a cautionary tale. We're going to lose key players. I would be shocked if that were the case. I think more than anything, it's roster management, and we might see some guys a little bit deeper into that depth chart that could be helpful for Georgia down the road that might say, you know what, I think I'm looking for a better opportunity in the short term a little bit quicker. So, you know, it's a smaller window. It certainly gets us a heck of a lot closer to game time than when you're talking about it end of December. But I don't foresee a huge turnover in Georgia's roster. If anything, it's guys you're like, well, I kind of get it. Might be the sentiment that follows if you see a name or two pop up from guys that might be leaving Georgia.
John, I love your insight. I appreciate you being here as a part of the program. Always fun to have, you know, some real football. We all got a chance to see at least something closely approximating real football. That we all got a chance to see at G-Day on Saturday and hearing your thoughts on that. Well, it just sort of feels like we're doing exactly what we should be doing on a day like this. So I appreciate that, John. Hope you have a great week, and we will look forward to getting a chance to talk to you very soon.
I appreciate it, B.A. It was great to see some football being played, especially when it's the Dogs. And it seems like we didn't lose. So
that's right.
That's always a win, except for the beanie weenies that the players got subjected to. So.
Yeah, I guess now both sides have to eat the beanie weenies. This was also a thing when you played, right? The steak or the beanie weenies, that was a thing, right?
Yeah, it certainly wasn't lobster, but it was steak or hot dogs. And, you know, it's a feather in the cap, a point of pride to be looking over and seeing some guy subjected to Joey Chestnut's fare as compared to, you know, a nice big old
didn't Coach
steak.
Rick say that some of the players like the hot dogs better than the steak anyway? Don't I remember him saying that at some point in time?
Isn't that wild? I mean, that's just bizarre to me. But yeah, there's always a couple guys who prefer hot dogs. That's probably because you lost.
John, good stuff. Have a good week. We'll look forward to talking to you soon.
I appreciate it. Go Dogs.
Yes, sir.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
All right, fun stuff indeed from John Stinchcomb on all of that. And, Carson Beck, I guess, was kind of joking about this, that he was hoping that the whole team would get steak and lobster since they tied. Kirby Smart says, actually, nobody gets steak and lobster. So, some pretty good stuff there on that. And, by the way, if you want to relive a lot of those sort of moments, and we'll play some of that for you here on the show, but if you go to the Dog Nation YouTube page, you can see a lot more of the video from on the field that Cody Chafin shot, or you want to hear the full Kirby Smart press conference, or the entirety of what Carson Beck had to say. You can get all of that, do your own version of recapping G-Day there on the Dog Nation YouTube page, a chance to see all of that. Now, I'll tell you this, as we go cruise around the SEC, courtesy of Royal Caribbean, that being in Athens on Saturday, I saw four different people who are going to be with us on our Dog Nation cruise, which is now just a week away on Allure of the Seas. And that was the universal consensus that everybody's excited about the fact that this year, the Dog Nation cruise, for the first time ever, is going to take place on one of these Oasis-class ships with the Flow Rider on the back and getting a chance to do the wave simulator experience, all the various neighborhoods, such as the Central Park. You know, the Central Park's got the Rising Tide Bar where you kind of start off on the Royal Promenade level and almost like a theme park attraction or something like that. It elevates you above to another level on the ship. It's an amazing thing. And if you're watching a video, you kind of look down at that Central Park area where the Rising Tide Bar finally finishes its journey there. How about the back of the ship and the Aqua Theater? You know, one of the things that Royal Caribbean's the most famous for is really kind of upping the ante when it comes to entertainment on board a cruise ship. And the Aqua Theater is an example of that, a high diving show where you got people jumping like 30, 40 feet in the air while the ship is moving on the ocean. It's just an amazing thing, but it's the commitment that Royal Caribbean has to keep you as entertained and having as good a time as you can possibly have. And that's when we can't wait to see so many folks next week on Allure of the Seas. And of course, when it came time for us to plan our Dog Nation cruise, we knew we needed a great travel agent to help us do that. So we said, hey, Royal Caribbean, who do you recommend? And specially selected for us by Royal Caribbean was Jessica Slater. She's doing a great job of getting folks ready for a great Royal Caribbean cruise vacation. She can do the same thing for you here in 2024 there as well. You can give her a call, 770-718-9147. That's 770-718-9147. You can also email her, jslater@dreamvacations.com. And she can plan your Royal Caribbean cruise vacation the same way that she's planned so many of mine and the same way that she's planned everyone's for our Dog Nation cruise here. She can do that for you there as well. All right, let's get ready to go cruising around the SEC courtesy of Royal Caribbean right now. And total confession, there's been a weird thing in the media the last couple of weeks, and I guess in a roundabout way we've contributed to this. A little bit of, I don't want to say dispute, but perhaps an array of, reporting out there about when the transfer portal thing actually begins. If you look on some sites, you'll see April 15th, but technically it actually begins April 16th. It's 15 days, which the 16th would be day one through the 30th, which would be day 15. So technically the portal begins tomorrow. And as we talked to John Stinchcomb about, there's a lot of people buckling seatbelts and getting ready to get settled in just to sort of see how wild this ride gets. And do we see, you know, high-profile players going from one team to the next? What we know is there are teams that desperately need talent, teams that, you know, perhaps had coaches that came on board late, or perhaps they thought the transfer portal, you know, took a lot from them, and they're going to try to go out and be aggressive. Other teams, and you'd put Georgia probably in this category, a little bit more interested in just sort of holding on to what they do have. You know, Georgia added its big name players probably in the winter portal. You know, Kirby Smart did allude to, you know, the notion that they still are kind of interested in that fourth scholarship quarterback. But that player, if Georgia adds another quarterback to the mix here, is not going to be a player that the average fan probably views as a recognizable name. It's going to likely be someone who played the Group of Five level and likely be the kind of person that if Georgia does add it, that you'll have to go and kind of check the stats out to say, well, is this a good player or not? Am I happy with who this player is or not? That's likely to be the kind of player Georgia adds if it does add someone. But nonetheless, everybody's sort of buckling up for kind of a wild run here, and we'll be looking to see just how wild that it gets. Saturday was a day of a lot of spring games. Georgia obviously put itself on display. Both Alabama and Ohio State had spring games there as well, and really big crowds for both those games. I believe both reported crowds in excess of 70-something thousand. Certainly in the case of Ohio State, they had a big crowd there at the Horseshoe. And, you know, there used to be a time when you maybe have bragging rights about which fan base had the biggest crowd and who did what. And maybe Ohio State and Alabama are going to brag about the crowds they put together. Perhaps they should. But for me, I was actually somewhat comforted by this. I do like spring games. I want them to matter. I don't like the Mickey Mouse stuff you see going on other places where it seems like it's barely even football and it's more like just fun and games, skills competition type stuff. I do like football that feels like football, and I really don't know how much the actual spring games themselves prepare you for the fall, but I like to believe they do some. Kirby Smart seems to believe that a little bit, I think. And so the fact that the spring game in Columbus was a thing that Buckeyes fans wanted to go see, and the fact that the spring game in Alabama and Tuscaloosa there was the kind of thing their fans wanted to go see. I'm glad about that. I'm glad that G-Day is not the only place where spring games can sort of still be a big deal. Now, both Alabama and Ohio State had some weird scoring systems and weird rules in place, but fans still showed up. Now, I did hear the Ohio State quarterback situation on Saturday, not exactly stellar. So as we start to go through these other spring games and who did what and how all of this went, I think one of the sort of big takeaways sort of outside of G-Day from Saturday was maybe not the best day for the Ohio State quarterbacks overall. So, you know, keep that in mind as there may be a little bit of a nitpicking about a certain throw a certain quarterback may have made for Georgia, and sometimes even some of the stuff involving Carson Beck. Just keep in mind that, you know, perhaps at a place like Ohio State, there are even more significant concerns than that as it relates to the quarterback position. Perhaps something to consider there. There was a very interesting story within the last couple of days in the LA Daily News, which is one of the news entities out there that covers USC. And this is, I would say, confirmation of something we've talked about before. The rumor mill was that at times there have been transfers to USC. One of the names that comes up, just to be completely honest, was Jordan Addison, the wide receiver, who left Pitt to go to USC, allegedly for big NIL dollars. And there were rumors that maybe not all the promises that were made from an NIL standpoint were actually being kept by USC. This is obviously relevant because we're in a situation where Georgia and USC are fighting over some of the same recruits and perhaps some of the same players. And this piece from the LA Daily News, if we can take it at face value, I'd say comes across as just a little bit damning because it goes through a series of situations in which a player to USC was sort of promised one thing on an NIL standpoint, and the actual truth turned out to be far different. I'm going to read you a few sentences here, and I apologize for reading, but I just think this is interesting enough that I want to make sure I give it to you the way the LA News put it out. Telling the story of a player and his family saying they visited USC, they had a meeting with the USC general manager, a guy named Dave Emmerich, and they were offered an NIL valuation through what's called the House of Victory, which is basically their NIL collective, whatever. And in reality, though, when the player chose to go to USC, the LA Daily News reports that what House of Victory offered once the player arrived was half of what they initially discussed with their visit. So you go on a visit, they say, if you come here, you're going to get X dollars. But in actuality, the LA Daily News reports the player actually got half of what he was promised. And the contract was broken down into a combination of passive and active income that they didn't expect. According to a screenshot of the contract provided to the Southern California News Group, which is the company, I guess, that owns the LA Daily News, the player would be paid a monthly sum for House of Victory to use his name, image, and likeness, and an additional payment in the contract hinge on certain amount of promotional deliverables being met, such as the completion of a post on social media or a physical event appearance. Now, listen to this. Here's where it gets crazy. So the player was offered some money, a car, and an apartment. And we saw in the case of Bear Alexander the picture of the apartment that he was supposedly living in out in L.A. But this is what the L.A. Daily News reports about this particular player for going to USC. The apartment, is they say, became more of a burden than a comfort because the player was forced to pay rent of his own accord off his salary from House of Victory. Both recurring usage rights and completed deliverable payments became inconsistent, not on the first of the month or biweekly basis, according to a screenshot of the parents' bank account alerts, meaning that they were paying him some money, but not like on a regular basis when they were supposed to, sort of sporadically making those payments. Eventually, the LA Daily News says, the player was dinged enough for late fees on rent that the parent reached out several times to USC to express frustration. Wasn't pretty conversations to try to, the parent says, to try to reach a solution of more consistent pay. They ended up receiving the full value of the contract, but the memory of a larger valuation still lingers. So in other words, you had this player who was promised an apartment, but come to find out, he had to pay rent on the apartment. Now, we want to go back to sort of a bygone age in college football, like a few years ago. What we were told is that, you know, the things that college football players had been getting for decades, free room, free board, all these players deserve so much more than that. That's when we're going to usher in this NIL era so the players can get what they deserve. But now you've got a player who's not even getting free rent anymore, according to the LA Daily News, that players have always gotten a place to live for free. And now through this NIL age, which is supposed to be for the benefit of the players, now this guy allegedly is having to pay his own rent. And the money that he got promised was half of what he actually what he got. Buyer beware when it comes to a place like USC and perhaps NIL, you know, more broadly, but certainly in this case USC, buyer beware of a program like that when this is the kind of reporting that's out there. And as it relates to college football in general, let me just tell you this, that anytime powerful people work very hard to make something less than transparent, there's always a purpose behind that. Anything that's complicated is complicated for a reason. And anything that's sort of shrouded in secrecy is shrouded in secrecy for a reason. Why don't the people that run college athletics want more transparency about NIL and who's getting paid what and who's doing what? I can promise you this. It is not for the benefit of the players. It is not for the benefit of the players. And when the actual truth of NIL is being hidden, I think it's a very fair question to ask. What exactly is it that you're trying to hide, and why is it to your benefit to hide it? Stories like this in the LA Daily News perhaps shed some light on that to the extent that we're able to take that at face value. I'll also mention this. This happened on Saturday. News coming out of the now Big 12, where Arizona State finds itself. Former Dog Hines Ward set to become the wide receivers coach there at Arizona State. Nice to see on screen there Ward from his playing days there at Georgia, black stripe down the helmet. That's still sort of a weird thing to see. But nonetheless, that's taking it back to the Hines Ward era. And here's all I'll tell you about this. Anytime Georgia has a coaching opening, like the one that had that James Coley filled a couple of months ago, a lot of Georgia fans wonder, Hines Ward, who has expressed some desire to be on the Georgia coaching staff, could he be in line to get a coaching job like this? And the only thing we can say with certainty is it certainly doesn't feel like right now that's a connection that's ready to be made. You know, Georgia's a program that keeps its cards pretty close to the vest. The fact that Ward has spoken so openly about this sort of doesn't quite feel like it's in keeping with the typical way of Georgia doing business. But the one thing that you cannot say is that you cannot say that Ward, who is a very well-played NFL star, who had great success, Super Bowl MVP, things like that, you can't say that he's got too big of an ego to do the hard work to become a coach, that he has been more than happy to pay his dues. Spring Football League, working for the Jets, briefly employed by FAU. This is a guy who's doing the real work to put a real resume together. So Hines Ward apparently was not a legitimate candidate for Georgia's wide receiver coaching job when it came open a couple of months ago. But as Ward continues to do the work to become the kind of coach who has the kind of experience that a place like Georgia would notice no matter where you went to school and no matter what your background is, maybe one day in the future, Hines Ward could be a legitimate coaching candidate for some coaching opening there at UGA. He seems to be doing the kind of work that would sort of put him in that kind of conversation, and you certainly noticed that coming off of Saturday, and we will make that cruising around the SEC courtesy of Royal Caribbean. So a couple of things as we wrap up here today. First of all, we had a great time being at the UGA bookstore there on Saturday, and so many folks came by to see us, and I kind of joked, you know, people talk about how far they travel to get to G-Day. I said on this particular Saturday, the rest of you are all playing for second on that because we had a chance to speak to our buddy Dave Snow, who's a fairly frequent commenter for us there at DogNation.com. Dave traveling over from Nairobi, Kenya to attend the game, and he did so bearing gifts. How about this from the U.S. Embassy? Let's see if we can show this to you. The U.S. Embassy in Nairobi, Kenya there. Really cool with the seal here on the front. If you look on the back, it's got the giraffes, very much in keeping with what you'd expect to see from Kenya there. Obviously, the beautiful wildlife that lives in a country like that. So Dave brought this gift to me. What an amazing thing, and I'll cherish this. My kids also love this there as well. So, Dave, thank you for that. We'll also give a golden shoe out. We have the final now of our golden shoe bracket pool. Congratulations to Jonah Carney, his team was Homeland Security. This was kind of a fun thing about this. Everybody got to kind of choose their own sort of team name for this. And in honor of Max Homa, who gave it a nice run all weekend long, Jonah Carney went with Homeland Security. And by one stroke, Homeland Security has won the Golden Shoe Masters Pool. His team of Scotty Scheffler and Max Homa, Terrell Hatton, the dog Harris English, who didn't have the best day but still contributed the winning score. Everybody who made our top four, that's first place, second place, and a tee for three, all had Scotty Scheffler, and obviously Scheffler winning the green jacket for the second time. So, Jonah, we will be reaching out to you and hopefully reaching out to a lot of the folks who were in this. We have a pretty good idea for some prizes that I want to send out. I think this could be fun. So we'll kind of be getting in touch with a lot of people about that. But Jonah, we'll give you a chance to celebrate on air with us your win in the Golden Shoe Masters Pool. Congratulations to you on that. And what a fun time it was watching the events of the Masters here this weekend. Lousy stinking Gators, they have their spring game on Saturday. You know, listen, it is what it is over there right now. 1,255 days. That's how long it's been since they've beaten Georgia. That is our Gator Hater Updater. Y'all have a great day. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Dog Nation Daily, presented by Pella Window and Door of Georgia. We'll look forward to talking to you then.